this Sichas Musa is unlike other Sichas Musa which I've delivered from the same spot over the years. Number one, it will begin with a statement which is being made not only by myself on my own behalf, but also on the part of two other very distinguished Rabbanim who are seated at my left, Rabbi Blau and Rabbi Levine, who saddled me together on a Beis Din in 1989. After I complete reading this statement, I will then begin the Sichas Musa, which is my own statement. In 1989, we convened an ad hoc Beis Din to adjudicate charges of inappropriate behavior that Eli Hiller lodged against Rabbi Baruch Lanner in a letter that Mr. Hiller disseminated throughout the Teaneck Jewish community. Our tribunal did not have an obligation. Our explicit mandate was to investigate the charges in the letter. Although we found three of the charges to be unsubstantiated, we concluded that Rabbi Lanner was guilty of three other offenses. At that time, we decided to share our findings only on a need-to-know basis. This decision, as well as the Pesach itself, was unanimous. Under this criterion, we read the Pesach to the litigants, members of the Rabbinical Council of Bergen County, the group that convened the Din Torah, a representative of the Orthodox Union, which employed Rabbi Lanner, and a representative of the Roma Shul, which had just appointed Rabbi Lanner as its rabbi. The December 21st, 2000 public summary of the report of the NCSY Special Commission placed in the public domain the matters of which we found Rabbi Lanner guilty, namely, kneeing teens in the groin, using salty language, and employing crude talk having sexual overtones in his interaction with female students and female NCSYers. In this public statement, we desire to go beyond our 1989 mandate as a Beis Din and state our opinion as three individuals. We state categorically that, in our opinion, Rabbi Lanner, based on the misdeeds of which we found him guilty and our understanding of abuse in 2003, which was inadequate in 1989, is unfit for communal and youth work. The number of affidavits that corroborate Mr. Hiller's charges of physical, psychological, and sexual abuse against Rabbi Lanner, stated in the 2000 summary report cited earlier, reinforces such opinion. Although the compilers of the report do not have the halachic status of the Beis Din, and therefore their report does not constitute a psak, we nevertheless feel that we may rely on it for our opinion. Over the last 6 weeks, we had two meetings with Mr. Hiller and a number of concerned individuals. In the intensive interactive dialogue with this group, encompassing 11 hours, we have tried to reconstruct the 1989 Beis Din experience. We have learned new facts and gathered new insights from these encounters. For the record, our hearing in 1989 spanned 18 hours. We reached our conclusions based on the information we had and deemed credible at the time. We, however, realize now that at that hearing, we made errors in judgment and procedure that caused unnecessary pain and aggravation. We accept responsibility for those mistakes. Furthermore, members of the Beis Din made mistakes in organizing the Din Torah. More fundamentally, we now realize that the diverse charges appearing in Mr. Hiller's letter fall under the rubric of abuse of various sorts, including physical, psychological, and sexual. Although we had responded many times as a unit to the call of the RCBC to serve as a Bezdin in monetary matters, in retrospect, we should have refused to take up the abuse case Mr. Hiller's letter brought up. We did not realize that abusive behavior can inhibit potential witnesses and distort the testimony of those who do appear. We take responsibility for our mistakes. We apologize to Mr. Hiller, his family, and anyone else who was hurt because of our mistakes, be they witnesses or other victims. We express our heartfelt sympathy with the young people who have suffered from sexual, physical, and psychological abuse. Our empathy extends to the parents and families of the victims as well. We wish Mr. Hiller and his family and all victims and witnesses who testify to support Mr. Hiller's allegations, Baracha v'atzlacha. Similarly, to those critics whose intentions will ashamed Shamayim, we wish Baracha v'atzlacha. And if there were any critics who did not act l'shem Shamayim, nevertheless, we offer them a complete mechila. Let us look to the future. We must do everything in our power to protect everyone from abuse. This includes reporting abuse to Jewish and, at times, to secular authorities. When a potential victim of abuse faces imminent danger, there should be no doubt that the principle of Lo Samod Al Damayecha, do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor, overrides other halakhic concerns, and one should immediately report the abuse to the secular authorities. Once again, we apologize for the mistakes that we made. This is a statement of the Beis Din as a Beis Din. I would like to now begin the Sichas Musar for this evening. Every human makes mistakes. I am no exception. There are many things that I see now which I did not see in 1989. Some are facts that I did not know or uncover then. Some are insights that even experts did not know then. My field of vision also contain blind spots, which, while I did not see, I should have seen. These represent mistakes in judgment for which I bear responsibility. These mistakes continued after 1989 as well. I apologize for all of my mistakes and regret any negative consequences that they may have caused. The recent criticism of the Beis Din's actions, and my role in particular, enabled me to discover the biggest blind spot of all. A person is blind to his own faults. Kol hanegoim adam roe chutz minigei atzma. All negoim a person sees except for negoim of his own. this Mishnah, which literally relates to Tzaraas, extends homiletically to all blemishes. How does one not see his own mistakes? Let us go back to history's first mistake, the sin of eating the forbidden fruit, the Eitz Hadas. Adam, instead of admitting his own mistake, blamed Chava, who in turn blamed the Nachash, the serpent. In our case, it is easy to blame others. In history's second mistake, Cain, like Adam before him, initially was not confronted with his mistake. He was merely asked, "Where is Hevel, your brother?" When he failed to acknowledge his sin, Hashem told him how terrible murder is. I thank Eli Hiller and his concerned friends and supporters for helping me during the last 6 weeks to understand my mistakes. I wish we would have spoken earlier. Let us look at mistakes of kings in Sefer Shmuel. The Talmud contrasts Shaul and David. Shaul sinned once and lost his kingdom and dynasty. David sinned twice but maintained his kingdom and dynasty. Why? The Maharshal explains that David admitted his mistakes, whereas Shaul did not. Why not? First, Shaul's sin was unintentional, as his failure to destroy Amalek completely was based on Talmudic logic, a kal vachomer, which was wrong. Second, the people had mercy on Agag and the best of the sheep and were not willing to destroy them. When Shaul finally confessed, he still justified his behavior by saying, "I feared the people." By contrast, David confessed immediately and unconditionally. In one case, the sin of counting the people, he realized the mistake on his own. In the other, his taking Bathsheba and his role in the death of Uriah, he confessed the sin as soon as Nathan HaNavi explained it to him with a parable of a rich man taking a poor man's only sheep. In the 1989 case, I believe my mistakes were unintentional. Furthermore, I listened to the people who supported me. For example, my Talmidim, whose loyalty I very much appreciate, reacted sharply to the ad hominem attacks, ascribing all sorts of motivations and hidden agendas to the critics. This led to self-denial of even the smallest mistake. Let me be clear. I bear no grudge against any of my critics, be they victim, supporter, or journalist. I wish them bracha v'hatzlacha, and I beg, even command, that my Talmidim do the same. After the primary goal of protecting our children, my next goal is to restore shalom in our yeshiva and beyond. I hope that in 4 weeks, on Purim, we will all dance together to the music of Jordan Hirsch, and with all our neshama in the spirit of Shalom. I thank my closest friends and colleagues, no more than a handful, who helped me in the painful process of recognizing the mistakes that I made. They were my Nasan Hanavi. My first apology relates to Eli Hillen. In reconstructing the events of 1989, although I only said things that I thought were accurate, now I see that some of them were not. Aside from the passage of time, I suppressed certain facts. This is the blind spot of which I spoke. I now understand how people, even great rabbis, who are totally committed to truth and honesty, could make an objectively false statement. In their minds, it was true. When confronted, my first response was, it could not be true. How could I have done that? It must be false. It took corroborated objective facts to open my eyes. Some people go through life in such denial. I do not fault them. I did the same. But now I learn more about human nature. In life, I have committed countless errors and have tried to acknowledge them when I realize them. But until very recently, I did not realize that what I insisted and believed was true was objectively untrue. One day, all of us will have to give a reckoning for all of our words and actions. The records there are complete and eternal in the court that I fear the most. Thanks to Eli Hillen, I have a chance to beg forgiveness in this world. My second apology is not limited to Eli. It relates not to a sin of the mind, but to a sin of the soul. Al todin es chavercha ad shetagia lemakoma. Do not judge your fellow until you have reached his place. My Nasan Hanavi told me this. Indeed, he concludes that it is likely that in 1989 he would not have done any differently in my situation. My defenders said and wrote that those who had the benefit of hindsight were unfair for ignoring this rule. All of this may be true. Yet, I am guilty of a similar mistake. Until last month, I cannot understand why the victims and their concerned supporters were complaining so harshly about me. Had I spoken to them earlier, however, I believe that I would have understood their complaints. To his credit, Rabbi Blau has spent the last few years speaking to and empathizing with the victims, and therefore he reached their makom much earlier. In contrast, I did not speak with them until last month, and therefore I'm only trying to reach their makom now. On my journey to their makom, I realized the terrible pain that my deeds or words inflicted on Eli Hiller and other victims as well. Even last month, in our first meeting, I did not understand the special sensitivities of such victims. I am still learning. I apologize to all victims to whom I was insensitive. I regret any pain my action or inaction caused. It tortures me that my deeds or words caused Eli such terrible pain, and that he suffered stoically for years while I was completely oblivious to it. I am devastated by the fact that I caused another Jew such searing pain, and that for so long I did not even realize it. This is a sin of the soul, and Eli is its primary victim. My soul, my neshama, my heart is broken. I pray that he find a place in his heart and soul to forgive me. However he responds, I owe him a bracha. As Rabbi Levine said to him last week, may the verse Samchenu Kimos Inisanu gladden us according to the days you afflicted us be fulfilled for him and his family. Bracha v'atzlocha b'chol ma'aseh yadeichem, blessing and success in all your endeavors. I now understand that although Apsak contains the findings of sorely inappropriate behavior referred to in our joint statement, there are many other complicating elements. In 1989, an honest person hearing the psak might have readily concluded that the sorely inappropriate behavior in the broader context of the psak was insufficient to disqualify a person from communal or youth-oriented work. Again, to his credit, Rabbi Blau recognized this before I did. I would like to make some general statements about Beis Din procedure. 1. Litigants should be informed in advance in writing when the Beis Din session or sessions will take place. 2. Notwithstanding the psak, litigants and witnesses should be treated with respect. 3. All efforts should be made to ensure that all material witnesses be given the ability to testify. Finally, until the Beis Din proceedings are completed, it is improper to order a litigant to issue a formal written apology. This Shabbos, we read about the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, a sin for which Am Yisrael suffers to this day. The Talmud links this sin with that of David and Bathsheba. How so? Both David and Am Yisrael were on a high spiritual level. They had overcome the Yetzirah, and as such, should not have been overcome by it. Logically, they should not have sinned. Hashem decreed that the Yetzirah should rule over them and cause them to sin. Why? So that no one should say, I will not be accepted. Neither an individual such as David, nor a community such as Am Yisrael, should feel that teshuvah is impossible. According to this interpretation, these two sins were specifically chosen because of their gravity. May I suggest a somewhat different interpretation? These sins were selected because of their subtlety. Many explain that the Egel Azor of the Golden Calf was not meant to substitute for Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, but merely to be an intermediary, not unlike the Kerubim in the Mishkan. The Talmud teaches that whoever says that David was technically guilty of adultery and therefore sin is mistaken. In this light, we are taught a crucial lesson. Hashem ordained these sins so that every individual and every community should be able to recognize misdeeds rather than rationalize them. This, after all, is the first step in the teshuva process. To me, this is the most important lesson to be drawn from this entire ordeal. Perhaps my experience will assist you, my Talmidim, especially those of you who will become Rabbanim, to try to eliminate the blind spots of self-denial. And when you become aware of a mistake on your own or through your Nasan Hanavi, admit and take responsibility for it immediately and unconditionally, even if the mistake was unintentional. And even if you share the blame with others, if you contributed to it, say chatasi. Yesterday, after reading a draft of this Sichas Musar, I suddenly remembered something. On Motzei Shabbos, January 25th, I led a kumzitz here on campus. Many of you were there, and we sang together, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. David, King of Israel, is alive and enduring. I asked why. I answered, because he accepted responsibility for his actions. This distinguished him from Shaul and enabled his kingdom and dynasty to endure. I said this just a few days before a new round of criticisms of me became public. But it was not until yesterday, after I finished preparing and writing a draft of this sikha, which refers to the same idea, that I remembered having said it. Why? Because when I said it, I did not see, but it may relate to me as well. At that time, I asked, from where did David receive the strength of character to make an embarrassing confession? I answered, from his progenitor, Yehuda. Yehuda was confronted, not by Hashem, as were Adam and Cain, not even by a Navi, like Shaul and David, nor was he confronted directly. He was simply presented with an objective proof of the facts. His response was, Sadka Mimeni, she is more righteous than I. As the Rambam explains, Yehuda had done nothing against Halacha, and correctly sacrificed valuable personal items to avoid public discussion of sexual matters. Tamar, the potential victim, was ostensibly guilty of deception. Nonetheless, since her intention was l'shem shamayim, Yehuda said, she is more righteous than I. Moreover, he understood from her expression, hakena, that he was being punished for his own deception of his father. Targum Yerushalmi adds to Yehuda's admission, better for me to be ashamed in this world than in the future world. Better for me to burn in the weaker fire of embarrassment in this world than in the all-consuming fire of the next world. Yehuda's statement was so powerful that it enabled his brother Reuven to publicly confess his own sin for the first time. And if my pshat is correct, it enabled Yehuda and his descendant David to merit an enduring dynasty. Let us all learn the enduring lessons for life of this live and enduring king, to accept responsibility for our actions. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam.